My name is Busisi Wehlajwayo. I am a career coach and founder at Black Women in the Workplace. The purpose of Black Women in the Workplace is to increase the representation of Black women in leadership positions. And we do that through coaching, through training, and through diversity programs in the workplace. So in today's video, I want to talk about the white men at work archetype. So corporate white men at work as an archetype. This talk is based on a book by Thomas Kochman and Jean Mavrelis, which is called Corporate Tribalism, White Men, White Women, and Corporate Tribalism at Work. So this book talks about white women and white men as archetypes. I am going to talk about part one of what they explain white men to be. So obviously, when you start saying a certain group is a certain way, this is a type of generalization, and people generally have a challenge, resistance to generalization. So Thomas Kochman and Jean Mavrelis explain how they come to this understanding of white men. So they are diversity experts. They do research and diversity programs in workplaces. So they use a process of research called ethnography, where they interview members of a group. They watch their behavior, so they observe their behavior and what they say, and they don't just look at what people do and their patterns of behavior, but they try to figure out what values, principles, rules shape and drive that behavior, and then they take that and formulate a cultural understanding of what they think is going on. And once they've done, once they've formulated an understanding of what they think is going on, they take that back and reflect that to the group for the group to either dispute or validate. And they found that most participants do validate this view. They say also as well that generalization works when you understand the bell curve, a phenomenon that is called, anthropologists call, salience, which says that those who fall within the middle of, so if you think of a bell curve, the most of the population falls in the middle, so they are similar, and then they are outliers. So those who might not be the same as what is explained might be outliers who fall outside the bell-shaped curve. So they also explain the difference between an archetype and stereotypical views of people. So they say that they use 5 points to define or to differentiate between an archetype and a stereotype. So when they define a cultural archetype, they say it describes the patterns of differences that ethnic group insiders will agree are true, authentic, and representative of the culture of the group. And then they show in the list, in the following list, how archetyping is different from stereotypes. So they have these five ways that they differentiate between archetypes and stereotypes. So archetypes are scientifically generated through the ethnographic process that I just explained, while stereotypes are non-scientific characterization. And then she says, and they also say that an archetype is a shared value pattern or attitude that insiders will accept as representative of a significant number of members of their groups. So if the archetypical behavior is reflected back to the group, they would agree. Whereas with stereotype, it's an outsider's view of that group's behavior. As an archetype is a descriptive generalization that is applicable to many members of a group, one that represents learned values, beliefs and assumptions. So it represents learned values, beliefs and assumptions. And a stereotype is an abusive generalization applied to all members of that group, often assumed to reflect innate characteristics. So it's not learned behavior, they just assume that the stereotype is what those people are. And the strategic goal behind archetyping is to promote social inclusion, right-left thinking, and more open communication. And while the strategic goal behind stereotyping is to promote social exclusion, right-wrong thinking, and close or restrictive communication. And then they say the behavior of archetyping is insiders look at the behavior of members of their groups and can say with greater authority what that behavior probably means based on greater knowledge of and access to members of that group. So you create an archetype if you're a member of that group or you have access to the to that group, so that you are able to qualify what you say about that group using checking it with the group members. Whereas stereotypes are people looking from an outside and making assumptions about the behaviors of people who are on the outside of that group. So it's outsiders making assumptions about people. So what do they say white men are like? So they say that the first one is that corporate white men feel that diversity is about them understanding the other, and it's never about the others understanding them. So they feel like diversity is pointed at them, that they need to change their behavior, they need to now speak differently, they need to walk on eggshells, and it's expected of them and not other groups. But what they don't understand is that other groups had to assimilate to what corporate white men had created as a culture. So they don't understand what other groups had to do to be able to work in a workplace, that we had to learn forms of behaviors that are acceptable to white people. We had to leave our cultures, that people of color had to leave their cultures, have to even now leave their cultures at the door and adopt the culture that is already outlined and acceptable to corporate white men. But now they feel like it's now them who are expected to now change, to understand others, to speak differently, to act differently, and it feels unfair. So they also don't see, corporate white men also don't see things as being their way. They don't see that things have always been their way, because they didn't have to change, they didn't have to do anything. So it was their culture, it was normal. They didn't see it as anything special because they didn't see what others had to do, which is kind of the same point. They didn't have to fit into a corporate culture, but all of a sudden now they do. And it also says that corporate white men are accustomed to competition from other corporate white men because they see themselves as individuals, not as a group. So they're used to having competition from other corporate white men, and all of a sudden they feel like there's more competition for what they assume is to be their jobs. Is what they never had to compete with others, and probably feel, which is what I think, that they probably feel like the others are protected by legislation in this competition, so it's no longer a fair competition. But what they don't realize is that others did not have access to even compete with them. At the interpersonal level, corporate white men have to cope with the general view of them from other groups as racist, sexist, till they prove they are not. nor as privileged members of the good old boy network. So they feel uncomfortable with the fact that people assume that they're racist and sexist until they prove that they're not. And they're also uncomfortable with the whole thing around they have privilege, with the realization that they had a social advantage as corporate white men relative to other groups. So they resist that idea, and they feel that it's unfair that people assume that they are racist. They believe that they are being fair, that everybody should compete on a fair fair ground. Corporate, as I said, corporate white men do not see themselves as members of a culture or of a group like other people of color assume they are, or like other people of color see as having a strong communal identity and personal ties to other members of their groups. They don't see themselves as a group. Even if they do see themselves as a group, it's never in the workplace. So if for an example, they still see themselves as Jews or as Italians and they belong to those members, it's outside of the workplace. Inside of the workplace, each corporate white man is primarily out for himself. So, and it is acceptable that a corporate white man can be out for themselves without any guilt. So they don't see themselves as a member of a group. And this is shown, so they're saying that what is shown, how you can see that a person does not see themselves as a member of the group is the shame that they feel when a member of a group has done something. So for an example, Is the shared feeling when something has happened with a member of the group. For an example, if a black person has killed people, like black people will feel shame that, oh, it's one of us. Whereas white people would not feel like, oh, it's one of us, it's so embarrassing. It's good. It's like, no, he's an individual. There's nothing to do with us. And then they say as well, corporate white men primarily become aware of their own race and gender when those features distinguish themselves from others who are surrounding them, especially if they feel targeted or at risk. For an example, if they make a turn in what is a black neighborhood and then all of a sudden they see that they are different. Which, when I think about it, would not maybe see ourselves as different as people of color if we were not also, if our difference did not put us at a disadvantage. But hey. So, and then they say in training sessions when Thomas and Jean ask CMM if they see themselves as a tribe or an ethnic group, or as a collection of individuals, their typical response is that they see themselves as a collection of individuals. However, in one session, there was this corporate white man who saw himself as a member of a white group. And since his response was not typical, they asked him where he grew up, and he said South Africa. So within the South African context, notwithstanding the dominant social positions of white, he was very much aware of himself as a targeted other. So it's interesting because this research was done in the US. It would be interesting to see how that is different from South African white men. But it was different from this South African white man. He actually saw himself as a group, as belonging to a group of white men. While corporate white men in the US see themselves as a collection of individuals, which is so interesting, they see everyone else as members of a group. So as much as they don't see color when it's just them, they do see other people's color or gender. So they say that when they see a white woman, they see the gender difference. And then when they see a black person, an African American, Asian, or Hispanic, they are able to see that those are different and are able to name them. So because they don't see themselves as a group, they do not see the problem. For an example, they're saying here, if you show them a picture of the management of a company and it's all white men, they would not see a problem with that. They would not see that the group consists only of corporate white men. However, to demonstrate that they see others as they are able to see others, they are saying that this one corporate white man had a team of seven. So he, after he hired the fourth, so he had to hire people to a team of seven. So he hired three, the last four people he hired were African American women. And he says that when he hired them, he didn't see color. He hired them because he thought they were the best for the position. But when he hired the fourth one, another corporate white man came to him and said he's taking this diversity thing too seriously. And since it was not his intent to hire on the basis of race and gender, he was taken aback at the suggestion that they were diversity hires. So he didn't see them as a diversity hires. And all of a sudden, he was now taken aback. So other corporate white men did not see his hires as hiring people who were qualified for the job. They saw them as hiring people to increase diversity. And so when he hired the fourth person, which made his team of seven to be skewed to more African American women, they were saying to him he's taking it too far. And that's when he realized, oh, it's actually looked at as gender. So his attempt to hire people regardless of race was seen by other corporate white men as taking diversity far. But and it's interesting, if they don't see themselves as a group, but they are able to see others as diversity hires. And they are able to see when people who are outside of the group are being hired. So there is a subtle understanding of others. And now the question arises that then how would this corporate white man think about hiring the next person? Would they hire the most qualified, irrespective of their color, or would they make sure that they hire a white person to make these people feel more comfortable? And if he doesn't hire a white person, how will his social standing within that group work? So he's saying that the personal willingness or reluctance of corporate men, white men, to endure the anger and hatred of others of their own group is key to the ultimate success or failure of diversity initiatives. So they're centering this as very important, that if other white people feel like if they do the right thing and include people of color when they hire people, if they believe that other white men are going to hate them, that is very key in whether they'll do that or not. So despite their representation as well in high level positions, corporate white men do not attribute to their success to having been members of a white male group. So they don't feel that there's an advantage to being a member of a white group. For them, it is individual characteristics, it was their qualities, it was preparation that enable them to take advantages of opportunities at different times in their life. So they don't see that color had given them any advantage, and therefore they're refusing then to see how color has prejudiced people of color from reaching those places. So this is called whitewashing, the refusal to see color and to refusal to see the impact of color in giving them privilege, and also the impact of color in keeping people of color from reaching those positions. So they believe that they are there only because of merit. But interestingly enough, when black people and when people of color are hired, they see them as diversity hire, even when they are qualified. So what they extend to themselves as merit, they're refusing to extend to others. And what they extend to themselves is not seeing color, they're still able to see color when other people of color, when other groups and other people of color are hired, they're able to see them as diversity hires. They're saying in situations when corporate white men are confronted by others with the charge of being privileged, they often respond angrily, even belligerently, saying, "I work 12 hours a day, no one handed anything to me on a silver platter." So by using working hard as a justification of entitlement and framing privilege as somebody handing them something on a silver platter, they avoid having to acknowledge that because of their race and gender, the road they personally went down had fewer obstacles in their path than that of the other group. So this knowledge, I'm going to do a part two, which really talks to how they act in the workplace. This is very interesting because it makes one realize the challenges that we're having when we're having these discussions, where it seems that we are not heard, or it seems that these discussions are divisive. It is because they are touching a nerve, and white men feel like they're being attacked, they're being called racist, all their hard work is not being acknowledged and appreciated. It looks like they've just been given things on a platter, and they feel like they're under attack, that their jobs have been taken away, and they don't see the privilege that they had, and the struggles that other people have had. What they see is what they are losing and what they are accused of. And I love that in this book, the authors really talk about when solving these issues, they talk about a multicultural approach instead of an assimilation approach, which has been used. So the assimilation approach has always been the workplace is like this, white men are like this, the workplace is a white cultural place. So therefore, if you want to succeed in it, you have to take on the cultural practice of white males. They're saying that there needs to be a multicultural approach where we each understand one another and find a culture that works for all of us. So yeah, this is what I wanted to share. Please comment. Yeah, let me know what you think.